Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. I am still technically on the road, but I'm here with Rob and Ashley, as always. Folks, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing good, man. A great weekend of racing for you and I. How you doing, true love?
I'm good. I'm excited to hear all about Brian's adventures at Darlington.
Seriously, he had a big weekend. We'll get into some of the things he did, which included a big sandwich. He climbed the fence. He did all sorts of things when he was in Darlington. But
did not climb the fence. I'll just put that out there right now, folks.
Nope, he did it.
First off, I've never in my life
climbed anything.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Listen, I've climbed plenty of fences before, breaking in abandoned hotels and shit. I know what I'm doing there, but I've never climbed a racetrack fence, and I've never worn a neon yellow shirt to a racetrack. So was also in turn one, and I was in turn four. So no, it was not.
Yeah, be a lot cooler if it was you, though.
Yeah.
My parents would not think that.
Using your one jail phone call to call into the show tonight.
Your mom watching her 40-year-old son scale a fence on Mother's Day.
Well, I tell you what, disappointed. Somebody's mama watched a much older man climb the fence. Somebody got that gift for Mother's Day, but I guess we'll get into that a little bit later. But
yeah, well, I guess might as well start off. So yeah, this was my first NASCAR trip of the year. Hopefully there will be a bunch more. I don't know how many more, but I'm working on a few different race plans. But you know, Darlington. You know, like I said, I've been lucky enough to be able to go to this track now for about 11 years. I think my parents moved down here in 2013. I can't remember if it was 2013 or 2014 was my first race, but either way, I've been coming here since around then. And since COVID, they've had Mother's Day weekend races down here. So it's a perfect opportunity to see my mom on Mother's Day and get to check out a race because they only live an hour from the track. So
that's great.
Got in Friday night, and I have not been to a truck race on Friday. I just never usually fly in on time for that.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that the weather was shitty. Like flying into Myrtle Beach, real bad wind and pretty decent rain when we got in there. I know it was raining in Darlington as well.
Yeah, my brother-in-law was at the track, and I really, from the photos he was sending me, I cannot believe they got that shit in. It looked treacherous.
Yeah, I was especially like getting, because we got after. I got picked up. We got dinner on the way back home, and I was just had my fingers crossed the whole time. Like, cancel it. Let's have a doubleheader tomorrow. That'd be kick ass to have a whole day at the track like that. But I got the race in, and until Sunday, I thought it was going to be the best race of the weekend because compared to Saturday, the truck race was fucking great.
It was
a lot of chaos going on. Not so much like guys wrecking each other. It was a lot of guys wrecking themselves. Like Kyle Busch wrecked himself lap two. Like that's fucking his thing. So that was wild. A bunch of wrecks, passing, all sorts of stuff, and a really cool finish with, you know, they had a green white checkered finish. I think it was like 8 or 9 to go. So not technically green white checkered, but a really good restart with chaos happening, and Chastain ends up getting the win. And he had a very awkward, I thought it was awkward, post-race interview, eating watermelon and then basically cutting a promo on the agriculture industry. It was very cool, I guess.
I liked that. Also,
not to mention, he also had seeds on his face the whole time, too.
Yeah, complete mess.
Like the true psychopath he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But as a Ross fan, it was cool to see. It would have been nice to have been there for that, but what can you do?
Yeah.
Saturday, however, go to the race and, you know, immediately I got to the track and, you know, did the whole, you know, trailers and all the displays and shit. And
yep.
I picked up, I think, day one. So here we'll get into the Zin chat now. So they had three different vendors of, they had Zins, Zones, and Ons. And yep. I managed to get my allotted amount from each one of them.
Dude, so, the photo of the sack you put on the internet was, it made my heart palpitate. I was so stoked to see
it. Not to mention the fact, Rob said the last time somebody got Zins at the track, they only had threes. Not at Darlington. Every single one of them had full strength, every single flavor, every strength you could get. So I got all the nines and eights I could get.
God, that bodes well for Loudon. I'm so fucking stoked. I already told my bandmates I'm going to use them as mules to go in there and load me up.
I'd probably set for the year because it's not like I'm popping these things all day long like most people. So I think I got enough to cover me for pretty much the whole year. Sunday when I went, I'll briefly say this. Sunday, I only got three from Zone because my stepdad was there. I'm not going to go all three of them. Yeah. And I wanted to get a tin for my neighbor who's trying to quit smoking, and I was telling her about him.
Yep.
So at the Zone trailer, everybody was wearing these Kyle Busch shirts, which on the back, they had his car, obviously, but they also had probably a 12-inch by 4-inch big black warning label, like, on the packages. So
fuck yeah.
I kept asking them if I could get one, but they said they were only selling them at the trailer and they're $32, so I didn't. Saturday was, I mean, I'm not an all guy or hater, so you know, it was cool to see him win. I know he broke a losing streak himself, but it was pretty much an all guy show. It was a very boring race. There wasn't a whole lot going on. You know, I watched the first two segments by myself, and then I ended up meeting my buddy Harris and Emily, his fiance, and we watched the third segment together. And
nice.
That was cool.
Yeah, I don't mind an all-guyer win, especially my cousin Jim is a big all-guyer fan, which, by the way, he's been listening to the show, so thanks for tuning in, bud. And
shout out to cousin Jim.
Cousin Jim, that's right. We're going to Kansas, baby.
Joining the Applebee's family for dinner, dinner night.
But yeah, I don't really have too many feelings about all-guyer, but it was nice to see him finally take a win. And I don't know, I don't really even mind the Darlington races, even when they get processional like that. It is a tough place to race, especially in those Xfinity cars. So I can see why, in comparison to the truck race, it probably wasn't as entertaining, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, not to mention, too, last year had a really good battle with Allgaier and Larson for the win.
Oh, yeah.
Or was it John Hunter Nemechek, right? Won that race?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I think John Hunter
Xfinity
Nemechek
series
won.
Knowledge just leaks out of my brain as soon as I'm done talking about it, so...
I think it was Larson and Allgaier wrecking each other, and then Allgaier won. John Hunter Nemechek won last year.
Sounds familiar.
Allgaier also tied Dale Jr. in Xfinity wins with 24 each, and so it makes them tied for 10th all time in Xfinity wins. So
that's pretty cool.
There's that.
Good day at the track. Oh, I did hit up the Gypsy tents before the race too, and pretty much the same as last year. Actually, I found a few more things this year, but there was one vendor that this particular vendor has had some cool vintage stuff the last couple of years. They charge insane prices for it. Like every single Dale Earnhardt shirt they had was anywhere from $75 to $150. Fuck. And these shirts I personally sell every single one maybe $30 to $60. For the ones they had. So absolutely batshit prices. I did get a very cool Patty Moise and Elton Sawyer spouse t-shirt, which a neat one I've been looking for my collection. So that was Saturday. Decent day, but nothing altogether.
Yeah, how was the concessions situation? I know that there's some special offerings they have at some of, not all the concession stands. I feel like a lot of it is probably your regular, you know, neon cheese on top of potato kind of situation, but they have some special stuff, right?
Yeah, so I mean, Darlington, while Bojangles was still sponsoring the race, they actually had Bojangles at the track, and it was only a buck or two more than you would pay at an actual Bojangles, so that was always cool. Darlington's food is actually very good, and yeah, this year's special menu, it was a meatloaf sandwich, which I got one of those each day.
It looks so good, dude.
They brought back the PD dog, which is just a pimento cheese hot dog, which they kind of like grill, and it's fucking great. got those both days. They also had like some sort of pork belly mac and cheese, which looked good, but too heavy for a race day. And
yeah, after a couple like meatloaf sandwiches, I guess.
I didn't necessarily expect the meatloaf sandwiches to be great race food, but they weren't all that heavy. Yeah, they were good. And they also had a beef and bologna sandwich, which I didn't bother with. Like, I don't like bologna that much, but great track food. It's affordable. Go to Darlington, you know, just get whatever they have in the special menu. The one pain in the ass thing, though, is they only have the special food at like one vendor on the front stretch, which Saturday was fine because I was sitting on the front stretch. Sunday, we always sit right in turn four. So I had to walk like way the fuck out there to get it and then come back. So that was pain.
That's cool, though. But I appreciate it when racetracks take a little extra effort. Loudon doesn't do that. That's my home track.
Well, yeah, Loudon's SMI, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the SMI tracks are complete dog shit as far as food's concerned. They're awful. So,
it's a good thing to let you bring your own shit in. I'll tell you that.
But Sunday, my stepdad and I went. My mom decided to opt out to the race this year. She didn't want to walk. She hates walking the stairs, Darlington. Like,
she didn't want to be embarrassed by her son climbing the fence.
Something
like that. Yeah. So it's just me and my stepdad. I know we got word that the Bitch It's Race Day shirts were once again on the premises, but I did not see them until I saw people in the track wearing them. So the guy was probably just like, I walked right down, the main walkway from the parking lot on the front stretch, which is where all those people are, and I just didn't see him. So once again, that shirt eluded me.
Yeah.
And actually, the only shirt that I got at the track, Chase Briscoe had a really cool retro throwback shirt, so I got that.
Okay.
There was some other cool stuff, but Sunday, before the race, I wanted to get there in time because I saw Uncle Kenny was doing a Q&A. And so we got there right when that was starting, which is cool. And it wasn't really a Q&A at all. They had the Darlington track announcer out there with Kenny, and unfortunately, he brought his brother Mike with him. And they kind of just like they kind of just talked to the crowd the whole time. There's only probably like 25, 30 people there. As it was starting, there was a guy right up front just talking to Kenny the whole time. Wouldn't even let him talk. Like, it was very funny. It's a Kenny Wallace experience. He has such weird fans, I guess, that just want in his personal space.
Yeah, well, when we were the normal fans.
Inside his literal home.
Come on by.
Well, that's the thing. I wanted to ask him about that, if he actually fucking took questions, but he didn't. However, towards the end of the little interview, he started taking photos of the crowd. He took one very specifically of me. I had this ridiculous old shirt on that had all these old drivers' names, but insults. Like,
was it the Earnhardt Rule one? Is that what it was?
Yeah, the Earnhardt Rule one. That's what I had.
Classic T-shirt.
So he took a photo of me, and then like I like went and got down and went to get a selfie with him, and he smiled and took the photo. So that was cool. So I got my Uncle Kenny photo. That
Fuck
was
yeah.
Hell yeah.
And that was pretty much it. Then we just kind of made our way to the seats, and it was a Reddick show for most of the day, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. I know he's good there, and you know he had the pole, but it was a race that took a minute to get going, but once it got going, it was fucking great. Much like a lot of the tracks with this new car, I mean, it's not like guys can pass each other incredibly easy in Starlington. It's not like the old cars could pass all that easily either, but
yeah,
there was just a lot of shit going on. We saw Josh Berry make his way up to the front. Larson was doing good most of the day until he had his issues.
Kind of dug his own grave there.
Yeah. The whole incident with Blaney and Byron and stuff like that happened on the backstretch, so I couldn't see it all that well. And I was very surprised when Blaney couldn't get his car fixed, because when he drove in, at least from what I saw, it looked like all his wheels were straight. Now, so I don't know if it was a bad toe link or what. Was it a toe link? Yeah. But his car did not look beat up. I was very surprised. I was surprised there was even a caution for that.
It wasn't even really Byron's fault 100%. Truex kind of snuck away with a freebie there. There's some family drama in there as well.
Yeah, we're going to blame Byron anyway for breaking his sister's heart.
Yeah.
It's funny that there's – I guess that – I mean, it's not talked about publicly. It's not like there was any sort of announcement that they broke up, but – you know, if you pay enough attention, you can tell that they have not been together for a while. And
yeah,
the comments about family drama was very funny to see for those of us who knew what was up.
That was great. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah,
yeah, a lot of people learning in real time that they broke up before the season started.
Yeah, not just a broken toe link, but a broken heart. So. Shit happens.
So. That's great.
Real quick aside, remember when Ricky Stenhouse and Danica broke up? Man, how fucking awkward that must have been.
Yeah.
Oh, surely.
Racing each other? Jesus Christ. Yeah. And they probably saw each other a lot because they were both dog shit back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Joy Rentros holding hands.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway.
I mean, yeah, I don't need to necessarily go through a whole race breakdown. I didn't take that good mental notes while watching the thing, but I mean, I was just glued to the track. I could tell Keselowski was fast, and he was one of those guys that, even though he wasn't in the lead most of the day, he was always up front, and he was always able to make his way up front. With Reddick, I mean, it seemed like Reddick was falling off towards the end of his runs, and especially when they got to traffic, that's when people caught up to him. I really did not expect Buescher to be up there at the very end.
That move he made where he drove it all the way down to Florida to get around those two guys, jimmy-jacking each other, was fucking amazing.
unlike last year, all that shit was happening right in front of us. So we got to see that pass happen like right in front of me. I got to see the whole Buescher and Reddick incident happen right in front of me. So that was really cool to see. And yeah, I thought when Buescher went down to make that pass, I thought he was wrecking. I thought he
I thought he was gonna fucking wreck Brad when he slammed him in the ass too. I was like, Jesus Christ.
That big push. That was nuts. Yeah, you don't see that all the time.
Didn't push him at all. He didn't go anywhere.
Didn't help that much. But yeah, good for Brad breaking the streak. How many 6,000 races or something like that it's been since he's won a race?
It was 100-something. So.
A lot.
Yeah, I was at his last win at Talladega in 2021.
Damn. So it's your fault.
Been a minute. It is. I was there like double birds ablaze, and I was so pissed that he won that race.
Weren't you saying to us through text that you stopped drinking Miller Lights during races because of that moment?
Yeah, also because of Brad.
Yeah.
See, I started drinking Miller Lights because of Brad, so I'm very brand loyal. Light. I have my Miller Lights. I got my Zones for Kyle Busch, so, you know, I'm since I've been a kid, I've always been brand loyal as a bottle.
Always been drinking Miller Lights.
Always been drinking Miller Lights. But yeah, I mean, the fallout from the Reddick Buescher incident was really, really interesting to see play out online because, you know, it was a hard racing incident. Reddick very clearly fucked up. Buescher was already in the wall anyways, but he wasn't in the wall bad enough to cut his tires down. Like, they were just racing hard.
Yeah.
Reddick, obviously, he admitted his mistakes. It was very clear he fucked up.
Did not want any of that corn-fed Texas boy coming at him, so he watched his mouth.
But to be fair, I think if Kansas wasn't the week prior and Buescher hadn't lost that way, I'm sure he probably wouldn't have been as pissed. But at the same time, like, there were people that were like, how did Buescher, like, how could he go, you know, confront Tyler like that and push him and stuff like that? Like, they race clean all the time. Like, yeah, they might race clean all the time, but he fucked up big time, and he ruined
Tyler,
both their days.
Tyler also parked right behind him on pit road. So, you know, I think they mentioned this on the Teardown, actually, which, by the way, that show is I love those guys. I think they do a good job covering the sport, but sometimes when they bicker like an old married couple, it's just fucking unlistenable. But I put that on in the car today when I was driving around, and they were talking about how usually these things kind of diffuse because the cars will get separated when they come down pit road. But in this case, Reddick was directly behind Buescher. So Buescher had about 5 steps to make. To make that happen. So I feel like maybe if Reddick had taken it a little slower, you know, maybe, you know, pretend he ran out of gas or something, you know, and parked further down.
I know.
That wouldn't have happened, but.
I personally have no problem with it because, again, nobody got punched. This wasn't fucking Austin Hill, you know, taking out Mike Snyder. This was, he literally just pushed him and he told him what was up. And Reddick
hard
apologized.
Racing. Yeah.
It was also holding his, he was holding his hands. Did y'all catch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Like a little patty cake.
That was good.
Angry patty cake.
Yeah, I like that.
And then he yelled about stickers. It was all a lot.
So I was.
People were like, why is he talking about stickers? Well, it's symbolism, you fucking moron. Yeah. Like, that's. Yeah.
But at the same time, what is Tyler Reddick supposed to do? Not take that opportunity? Yeah, he fucked it up. But, like, I mean, who cares? Like, Buescher's been really fast lately, so you kind of don't want him in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah.
I think Reddick's definitely got one coming after this, maybe. Maybe they get to, you know, we get to the playoffs or later on, and there's a situation where there's something to be taken. Maybe Tyler will, you know, regret making that decision. I think he already does, obviously. Right. But I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off, Trilla. Okay. What were you going to say?
Well, I mean, Buescher's whole point was that Tyler already has a win, and yeah, he does, but that doesn't mean that Tyler's not going to go out there and try to get all the wins that he can get every single week. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
Those are playoff points, and it keeps other drivers out, so.
Yeah, it's racing.
It's not his job to, like, pull over and be like mid-race, think, oh, shit, Chris doesn't, he doesn't have a win. I should.
Yeah, asking the spotter if the guy he's racing is in the playoffs or not. Like, fuck out of here with that.
He's not your teammate. He's not the same, you know, manufacturer.
Yeah. I just think the move was a little too early. I mean, they still had 8 or 9 laps to go. In saying that, I also think that that sort of incident probably would have played out maybe not as aggressive. They might not have wrecked each other like they did. But I think regardless, those two battling for the win, Brad would have had him. Because he was coming and... Yeah. He could have got around those two while they were doing their thing. So I think it was Brad's race to lose regardless.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, I'm not as much of a Keselowski fan as I used to be, but I really like what he's done with that team. I have a lot of respect for that. And you see how hard he's worked and how much he's changed that whole team and how well they've done the last few years. So to see him finally break that streak and get that win was really cool to see. Yeah. This is my second time seeing him win at Darlington. This one was probably a better win, even though the other was the Southern 500.
Yeah. Also, Justin Haley in the Rick Ware affiliated car, a Roush affiliated car with Rick Ware, getting a top 10. Mm-hmm. So that was real impressive.
Fords in general were really good. I mean, you looked at, you know, once again, 3 of the 4 SHR cars were fast. And Barry, I did not see Barry coming from 33rd to 3rd. That was fucking really cool to see.
Yeah, no one saw that. I think Gregson had an okay run too. He ended up like 12th or something like that. Yeah.
It's those secret study groups they've been having.
That's true.
Paying off.
Shame to see Ryan Preece. Well, he actually got a top 20 out of the deal too, so a better day than he's been having. But in that Flamingo Motorsports throwback, most folks don't really know what that is, but that's was a very prominent modified team up here on the tour. And I got to see Timmy Solomito, and Ryan won his championship in that car, so it was neat to see those colors out there. And wish it would have been a little higher up in the standings, but you know, a good day for SHR in general. But man, I just gotta say, maybe it's just the internet, and it's just the way we communicate with each other now, and how the internet is so direct. But it seems like for a long time it kind of felt like it was Chase Elliott fans versus everybody else, kind of. But as we're kind of getting into this new generation, there's a lot of like fan bases developing around a bunch of different drivers, and people are just getting pissed off. And I think that's kind of fucking awesome that we're kind of getting that back, you know, where there's actual legit fan bases that get angry about shit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we didn't see that for a long time. So it's kind of nice to see it transition from like the Dale Jr. fans versus everybody else, or which turned into Chase versus everybody else. And now it's just kind of like a little bit more of a split group. Maybe that's just me, but I've kind of noticed that. And you know, everyone booing Denny and shit, and then cheering him. It's fucking awesome. It's a part of NASCAR that's been gone for a little bit, and I'm glad to see it return.
I mean, the three of us grew up in the Gordon Earnhardt era.
Oh yeah.
Where that fan rivalry dominated the sport. So
yeah. But yeah, the fans taking care of the business that I guess NASCAR really couldn't, trying to promote people.
Great
weekend. I was just saying, great weekend. Before we move on from this, I don't know if you have any more notes from your trip at all to Darlington. Anyway, I know you went to the Petty Museum today down there and got to see some shit.
That was going
to
be the next thing. I mean, yeah, Darlington. I guess the only other couple things I'll say is the attendance. Saturday it seemed like there were more people there than I remember for the Xfinity race, which was cool. But Sunday wasn't sold out. I mean, it was a decent crowd. I feel like there may be a few more people last year, but. Either way, I mean, it was great day, great weekend of racing.
Well, we could definitely text you the whole time. We talked pretty much the whole race.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi there worked pretty well. I know Jeff Gluck was saying it wasn't good enough to do his post-race podcasting, whatever the hell he needed to do online.
To bicker with Jordan Bianchi on the internet, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as, like, actually being to communicate the track, once you were inside the track and got on the Wi-Fi, it worked pretty well. So that was cool.
That is cool.
But, yeah, great weekend. I'm definitely now it's been a while since I've been with Southern 500, but after this weekend, I am very much considering coming back down for September. Plus it's the regular season finale.
Yes, it is.
You know, again, my folks are right here, so I got a place to stay. So, you know, if you two or anyone that I know personally want to come down to September, let me know and get a place to stay. We can have fun.
Shit, man. Darlington's been on my list for a very long time, and I got family within a short drive too, so there's really no good excuse for me not going down there, so maybe I'll take you up on that. Before we move on from get into the museum talk here, I do want to point out a cool little thing Michael Waltrip did on Friday night. He kept I don't want this to slip through the cracks because it's very funny.
Very important.
Taylor Gray, of course, had another great showing. Nice little throwback too. I love that paint scheme. I thought it was the Sears Rich Bickle throwback for a little while, but I was proven wrong. It was the Superflow colors, which was still looked good. And again, another nice run for fellow New Mexican Taylor Gray. I always love to see those guys run well since they're from my home state. But despite being in the Truck Series for, 4 years now? Something like that? Long enough to not call him Taylor Gay several times on the broadcast, which it brought me great joy just hearing that over and over again. I know I'm a fucking 10-year-old boy over here, and but man, that was funny as fuck. So that was my favorite thing from the whole weekend, was just the perpetually calling him Taylor Gay. I love that.
I just think after last week with being in the booth with Josevar and hearing that story about the boys getting on at RCR, Mikey's got some dudes on the brain.
His mind is wandering.
Well, it is almost Pride Month, so he's just leading into it. So. But yeah, I love that very much. So hopefully that keeps up, and look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a Taylor Gray fan now and pull for him to do well so they have reason to mention him.
Exactly.
Today it's my last full day in South Carolina, and my mom, we didn't really have anything planned. My mom has talked about going to the Petty Museum. Like, she's been before, and like, she loved it, and like, she met Richard last time she was there. So
that's cool.
With nothing to do, she's like, we're going to go to the museum tomorrow. I'm like, okay. And that's, you know, twist my arm. So we got up and did that. And
where is the museum?
It's in like Randleman, North Carolina. It's like 2-ish hours from my parents' house. So not like an insane drive or anything, but a day in the car.
East of Winston-Salem.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. We get to the museum, and you know, we check in and say hi to the woman at the counter and all that stuff, and she mentions that Richard's going to be there soon, because I guess Monday they do their little recap podcast. So we went and looked around for a while, and that was really cool. I was kind of like Ashley. I was, even though obviously the racing history stuff is very cool, obviously seeing all the cars was cool. I actually went through all of his trophies, and I found trophies for Albany Saratoga Speedway and Fonda Speedway, which are two of my hometown area tracks.
Oh,
so
shit.
It was cool to actually see those. I didn't think he had those on display. So do the tour and look around, and then we catch the podcast. And I don't really watch or listen to this, or I've seen clips here and there, but it was him and Dale Inman, and we watched, it was like 15-20 minutes, and they talked about Sunday's race. And boy, oh boy, are they crotchety old men. Like, Richard was just kind of like they were both just like, they didn't seem to be super excited about the race. They were kind of poo-pooing the throwback weekend. Richard's like, well, they've done all the paint schemes before. Like, they're running out of them. And just,
he's not wrong about that.
He's not wrong, but I think it's more, people can be more creative, and that's also a sponsor issue too. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of paint schemes out there, all forms of racing.
But
here's
a question that I want to have, not to derail this too much, but why can't some of these guys, like JGR, who have a direct line to Toyota with that beautiful Corey Heim off-road truck scheme they ran, or Brad with Castrol, why can't they just fucking run those all the time? They look iconic. It's their branding. Why wouldn't you just run that all the time now? It's fucking sick. Like,
part of it, I think, is just establishing your own legacy. I mean, it's cool to see the throwback stuff, but at the same time, you know, I think it's important for modern teams to also establish their own identities. And it's so tough to do that now with how the sponsors change. And even Richard brought that up, how the sponsors are different every weekend. And there's only so much you can do to change that. But
it's true.
You know, it's cool. I think it's fine to see it once, twice a year, this type of deal. As good as, say, Brad's cars look, I don't necessarily think he should have that all the time. I think it's a cool thing to pay tribute to, but it's still not Brad. It's still not what he's established. So,
that's true. I mean, all the Castrol cars look pretty good anyway, anytime they roll something out there, but this one in particular was so clean and classic looking. I'd like to see it more, so I'm just going to put that out there in the universe. Let's do that some more, please.
Meanwhile, we had fucking Truex throwing it back to himself from, like, what, 4 years ago or something?
Running the same sponsor he always does at Darlington.
Fucking asshole. Jesus.
Very, very boring.
On brand for Truex.
So to wrap up the petting museum talk, so at the very end, you know, Richard does his podcast and he you know, meets with there's only probably 15 people there watching, so he meets with everybody.
Where do they do that? Sorry to interrupt, but
so right when you go in the lobby, there's the 84 car, and right to the left of the 84 car, there's that little area, and they set up a table there and they do that. Right in the front end. They do that.
Because the last time I was at the museum was like 2 years ago, and they hadn't started doing that yet, so I was just curious.
It's right there in the front. So anyways, I'll go to meet Richard, and I was like, well, I'll get to ask him about Albany Saratoga, because, you know, who the hell is going to ask him about that? So I was like, hey, do you have any memories of running there? And he mentions, was it asphalt, right? I'm like, it was dirt. He's like, you sure? I'm like, pretty sure it was. So I got my dates mixed up, because there was a short period of time when Albany Saratoga was asphalt.
It's like way back in the day, right?
Yeah. And it was when NASCAR was running there. So I, like an asshole, tried to correct Richard Petty on his memory, and he was right and I was wrong. Because he even remembered driving into Fonda. He remembered driving into Fonda and having to drive through a graveyard to get there. So his memory was sharper than mine. So real dickhead move by me.
For as many like head injuries as he's had in his career, his memory is incredible.
Yeah.
And also Richard was very, every single woman there, he was very flirty with. I'll say that. So
hell yeah, Richard.
That was interesting.
Well, he don't dress that way to this day for no reason. So
that's true. He's a single man now. He's been single for a while, so he's got to look good. That was my experience. It was a very cool to see there. It was nice to get to see Richard. I got Kyle Petty's book, and they had these, I mean, when you go there, there's all sorts of weird random merch and stuff, and they had these posters that Richard did for some sort of bicycle safety campaign that has like him and three of his grandkids on BMX bikes. So of course I had to get that.
That's
going to be on my wall sooner than later. So
that's amazing.
Cool trip. You know, good way to wrap up the first big race weekend for me, and I'll be heading back home to Ohio tomorrow. So
nice.
That pretty much wraps up all the Darlington stuff for me. So
that's awesome. Sounds like you had a good time. Very jealous. I'll have to come to the Southern 500 sooner than later, because I've always wanted to go there, and I've never heard a complaint about Darlington as a place to visit. So.
No, I mean, I've always loved it. The races have sometimes not been the best. I will say in 10 years of going, I think Sunday was probably the best race I've been to there.
Nice.
So it was just fun. So very, very good way to start off my personal NASCAR season.
Fuck yeah. That's great. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, what's next? What else are we going to talk
about? We got a fan question this week, which is nice.
We do. It kind of plays into what we just talked about with the different fan bases. So
that's true. Yeah.
Go ahead and read it.
This comes from a great account on Instagram, NASCAR Pulp. They're always posting some cool shit on there. NASCAR_Pulp. Give them a follow. He wrote to us and said, hey guys, hope all is well. Not sure you've seen the truck broadcast, but I caught a Mikey slip, figured I'd share, which we addressed. So we weren't the only ones who caught that. Also, I was like, you say you never forget your first love, but I'm curious if you ever forget your first driver, whoever your favorite was when you first got into NASCAR. Has any driver eclipsed them for you? Mine was Bobby Labonte. No matter what he's driving to this day, I cheer like hell. When he won that SRX race a few years ago, I treated that shit like a Daytona 500. Cheers. Well, my first driver was Davey Allison, and I think yours probably was too, True Love. So that didn't work out too well for either of us.
No, it didn't at all. But we didn't get to cheer for Davey in a SRX race.
No, but I will say that I still wear Alabama Gang and Allison in general and gear as much as I can.
Yeah,
I'm a giant Kyle Larson fan. That's no secret to anyone who listens to this show. And half the time I'm wearing Allison gear to this day, even though I'm pulling for Kyle. So. Had he lived, I definitely would have probably continued that. And I'll say that when, you know, Tony Stewart was kind of my next guy. Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart both kind of coming from dirt and all that. I kind of latched onto them, and I stuck with them until they retired. That's for sure.
Well, True Love, I mean, she's got the Elliot connection, so that's aside true. From Allison, that makes sense. And now, yeah. I mean, yeah, you can speak for yourself, Ashley, but I mean, your fandom has kind of naturally transitioned from one Elliot to the other, which obviously makes sense from where you're at.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but Davey was my first favorite. I mean, if it wasn't for me becoming a fan of him, I don't think I would have been as diehard of a fan to this day.
Same, yeah.
Because I just latched onto him so hard.
So let me ask this then, because I was an Ernie Irvin guy, and I was actually, like, I liked Ernie and Dale right off the bat, and you know, that was when Ernie was still in the Kodak car. I liked Davey, and I was obviously very bummed when he passed. But when Ernie took the 28 car, I was set. So I'm actually, yeah. I guess, you guys didn't want to follow the 28 car like I did? Or you just didn't like Ernie? Or
well, I did. I did for sure. But I guess that was sort of my first sort of entree into teams changing drivers rapidly, because Ernie got hurt pretty quick, too, in the 28.
Yeah, after kicking ass, though, in the car.
Yeah, he was great. I liked to see that.
He would have been a champ.
Yeah, I liked to see that, for sure. I always had a soft spot for Roush or whoever's driving the 28 to this day, to be honest. I will still, even has nothing to do with Robert Yates anymore. I definitely would still kind of pull for that, but, yeah.
I liked Ernie in the Kodak car, but when he took over the 28, I don't know, it just... Even as, like, a young child, it didn't sit right with me. I was like, that's Davey's car.
Yeah.
And Jeff Gordon just happened to come into the sport at just the right time for me to, like, latch on to him instead. So
that's kind of how I was, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a soft spot for Rusty, too. I think it was just the black cars. But yeah. Well, I didn't become an Ernie Irvin fan. I won't say that.
So I guess that should lead us into that second part of the question, though, because I mean, we had these, you know, I think as a kid in general, or even maybe as someone who's new to the sport, you kind of find a driver and you stick with them. However, as an adult, that's kind of changed to where I have a handful of drivers that I've liked over the years and a handful of drivers now that I like, but I don't want to say I'm impartial because there's always people I root for, but I would say now as an adult, that's been, you know, back following the sport now for 15 years or so, I've never really had that strong fandom. Like, I just love racing and I love going to the races and I love rooting for the teams and drivers that I like, but
yeah,
there's not been one driver that I've latched onto like I did with Ernie.
Yeah. I mean, Larson for me, definitely. If I look at the display case in the basement, I have a lot of those die casts somehow. I don't know where I bought them all or where they came from, but they're here. So I think that, and I get pretty animated anytime some shit happens. So I guess I don't know if I would have behaved the same way when I was a kid, had Davey's career extended further.
Yeah.
And, or had I stuck with my NASCAR fandom as I got into my teen years, because it definitely kind of faded away as I started playing more music and shit like that, you know, as you do, as we all did, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely like Larson as much as I like Davey now, I think, as far as like a fan standpoint. Especially with how my blood pressure goes up anytime he's leading. So something's always going to go wrong, so like it did on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there was like a lull between like the early 2000s up until 2014 where like I still followed, but not as closely. A lot of it had to do with I didn't have, like, one driver that I was, like, latched onto during that time either until Chase came along to the Xfinity series. And then I latched onto him, and, I mean, that's been my driver for the past 10 years. So,
yep.
I mean, obviously I'm a diehard Chase fan and I will be until the end of his career, but it's hard to like compare that to Davey because I didn't get that many years with him and I was so young. So
yeah,
for Davey, it's more like a sentimental connection.
I agree with that 100% for myself. Well said.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to get to see Ernie get his comeback win and unfortunately see the end of his career. And, even though I love those memories, Ernie has also kind of proven himself to kind of be a dipshit. And also some of the stories that have come out about his time in the car, like how he blew up a motor to get out of Morgan McClure's car and these other things, like, you know, him just kind of being a dickhead behind the scenes, like that kind of, I don't want to say tarnishes those memories because that's just like a whole different segment of my life, but I don't necessarily like,
doesn't help.
Yeah, I don't have that same love for him as I used to, but I'll always like, there will never be a better memory for me than getting to see him get that win in New Hampshire in 96. Like there's nothing will ever top it. So
yeah, that's fucking awesome. I've never seen Kyle Larson win. I've never seen anybody I like win. So that's pretty much how it goes for me.
Well, I've seen him win a few times, so
yeah, same.
Thanks,
I'll let you borrow those.
Thanks. I'll put them in the display case with all these random diecasts. So, which, by the way, my brother-in-law is listening. Thanks for the giant one that's in here now. He got me the Auto Club win from 2022 on sale at Lionel for my birthday. So it looks good. Yeah. Nice little addition. But yeah, the rest of them, who fucking knows?
So I guess that brings us
in the parking lot.
You drunk shop sometimes, you know.
So going on to some news and notes, continuing with the Zin discussion. Noah Gragson has been very vocal about his Zin use lately to the point of making Zin themed merch, which I did not see at the track, unfortunately. But I guess somebody asked, he just said, you can, you know, go with it, Rob. You can handle this one.
I think this was actually, was this in regard to the All-Star vote or just him talking about?
He's definitely using the Zin thing as a, to try to get votes for the All-Star.
Yeah, race. So Dirty Mo Media put a tweet up a couple days ago, just kind of trying to, you know, get the fan vote thing going. And Noah Gragson responds saying, "I rip sixes. That's all you got to know and the only reason you'll need." Which, fair enough. I appreciate a six man, as I am one as well. I alternate. But I will say this about Noah Gragson. I kind of feel like he's the sort of dude who would carry a 10 of sixes around, like the actual 10, but it would have threes inside of it just to pose. It kind of seems like, you know, not to judge a man's character, but I wouldn't be shocked if he had a couple threes mixed in with the other citrus sixes in there. That's just me, though.
Next time you see him at the track, you'll have to ask him to borrow one.
I will.
And then you can test it out.
Let's see how six you are, but I'll be voting for Justin Haley in the fan vote. So that's just my my two cents.
He has been running a great ad campaign.
Yes, he has. And we can't really talk about this. We actually have breaking news we can't talk about, but I'll say this about Justin Haley. He will be in a very fast car next year, or a much faster one than he is right now, that's for sure. So you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. That brings us to more silly season rumors then, because there's all sorts of shit going on as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I didn't listen to this episode, the new episode of DBC, but apparently they were kind of getting into what might happen with mergers and shit next year. Everyone knows about the Front Row SHR fuckery, whatever's happened in there. Who knows? One piece of this that I didn't see coming is that Chase Briscoe might actually be the odd man out in that merger, and he might end up with the Wood Brothers, according to the guys on DBC, because Ford loves him. He does have sponsorship, and he's too good of a driver to let go. He's great, and he's honestly the kind of thing that Wood Brothers kind of needs, I think. So that would be an interesting landing spot, and one I definitely did not see. But the big piece of this was that there's a potential merger between Trackhouse and Kolleg, which we've seen them work together before, but can't say I saw that one coming either. So
I think their momentum has fallen off quite a bit with this new car, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Also potentially Cole Custer coming back to the mix and whatever amalgamation of Front Row Stewart Haas we see, which is also something I I guess I'm not surprised to hear that, but I won't say I didn't see that coming because he does so well in Xfinity. But I feel like his days down there, it's very much a John Hunter Nemechek kind of, you know, go back to the minors and get your shit together and come back kind of thing. But yeah, lots of big stuff going to come out in the next couple months here, it seems like. But yeah, Briscoe to the 21 is not something I ever imagined, but it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Let's see, what's next? So the Mexico talk is back up. Sounds like they're going to Mexico City instead of one of the Richmond dates. And we don't know if Kyle Busch is going to make it in the country.
Or make it out of it, rather. He can go to Mexico if he wants to.
I didn't realize that he'd actually won there in Xfinity, or whenever the hell that was, 2008, I guess. So
I guess
that
did.
Was an interesting... Yeah, I didn't realize that. I didn't even realize, again, that was during my lapsed fandom era, so I didn't realize he even had a race down there.
Yeah, just as a refresher for the folks at home, he brought a gun to Mexico in his carry-on and his private plane and got busted by security at the airport coming out of Mexico on vacation. And he made it out of there. I'm sure he paid his way out. That's usually how these things go. I think we may have even talked about this last week, but there was definitely a lot more talk this week as this Mexico rumor picks up. That rowdy might have some trouble getting out of Mexico. Might cost him some more money.
Yeah, they'll get in there. The palms will be greased no matter who has to do it. So I'm not too concerned. It's just funny to talk about.
Speaking of money, Chicago, of course, they hold the street race right now. They also have a really great oval just north of town in Joliet that maybe we'll get to see come back if this comes to fruition. But apparently there's a lot of rumors, and this is actually posted by Sports Illustrated, which I don't know. I haven't read that magazine in a good 30 years, so I don't know how reputable they are anymore. But they're saying that Chicago has the city of Chicago has potentially signed a deal with Formula One to come to the streets there starting in 2026, which would mean a fourth Grand Prix here in the U.S. Formula One is denying that as truth. This doesn't seem to be anything more than somebody kind of jumping the gun. But... and they don't even want NASCAR there. So it would be very interesting to see if Chicago would bring in a more annoying, expensive racing series. But,
yeah. Don't we have enough overpriced cheese fries?
Yeah. Well, they know the people will pay the money. So I guess. Yeah. But that'll be something to keep an eye on in the coming years here. Again, 2026 is when that's projected to happen, if it does. You can kind of go either way. I don't know how ironclad this is, or if this is really a big story or not, but something to consider for NASCAR. Yeah. Well, it's big for NASCAR because, you know, they're trying to renegotiate with Chicago, and it kind of seems like that might not happen after this current contract runs out, and they've got that nice oval and the intermediate racing is so good. Maybe this is just another step in that direction to bring racing back to Chicagoland.
Yeah,
I'm really hated Chicagoland.
And it's always been one of the better mile and a halves, in my opinion. Yeah. Chase got a big win there, didn't he? A couple of them, I think.
At Chicagoland?
I think he did. Who knows?
Not in the Cup Series.
Maybe not in the Cup Series. Never mind. But but it'd be cool to see that place come back, because it's pretty much a carbon copy of Kansas. So.
Yeah. And then on to, there was a fun video that I didn't get a chance to watch, so you guys will have to summarize it.
This was my favorite news piece of the week.
Same. Same. I loved this so much. Yeah, apparently, Randy LaJoie does not like people questioning his son's ability.
Well,
at all. Yeah, which
maybe if his son fucking won.
Some people I know have paid consequences for this, and it looks like Uncle Kenny might. Kenny was talking about how Chase Elliott on one of his shows, he has like 15 podcasts now, but he was talking about how
can't keep up.
The last true multi-generational connection to the past.
Yeah,
championship caliber.
The last great driver bloodline.
Yeah, which is, he was referring to Chase Elliott, which is pretty fucking true, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
And apparently,
as far as Cup drivers go,
apparently Randy LaJoie didn't take too kindly to that and kind of cornered Kenny in the, what was that place called? They had like a alumni section at Darlington, which was kind of cool. All the old heads could come hang out and tell war stories and drink free Michelob Ultras or whatever they did for him. But. And then Kenny kind of breaks down like why he feels the way he does. His dog makes an appearance, which is really funny. Pops out of the ground like a cartoon snake, which I really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. But or out of the blankets on the couch. But yeah, just, you know, I guess if I had a son, I'd love him too. But come on. True love, your thoughts?
I don't know why Randy gets his panties in such a bunch over Corey every time someone talks shit about him. But, I mean, your son is not carrying on your great bloodline. He's never even won an Xfinity series race or a truck race.
That's the big thing. Is like, it's because cup performance is a dog shit. That's fine. But if he had a track record to be like, okay, well, he's at least proven himself in these other series. He didn't do that. He has not done that at all.
Yeah. So, and no one mentioned Jeffrey Earnhardt in this conversation either. So I don't want to hear about that shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. And, I mean, no offense, Jeffrey. You can kick my ass, but it's all good.
We have Blaney, but like, Dave wasn't like a legendary cup driver. He was likable. I liked him when he drove in the cup series.
Yeah,
but
hell of a dirt driver.
A legendary dirt guy. Yeah.
Never made the impact that Bill Elliott or Chase Elliott or Dale Earnhardt Jr. or any of these fucking guys did. So yeah, Kenny's 100% right on this. And
Randy needs a fucking take a reality
check. Chill pill, bud. And we'll continue to talk about Corey on the show every week. So
every week, weekly segment.
Yep.
And then Rob, it is May, and finally, we're about to start qualifying at Indy.
It's a maybe
big for you.
It's a big morning, right?
Well, it's gonna rain every single day except for Thursday. So this could make and heavy rain too, at least an inch or two a day.
Midwest weather is dog shit right now. So, I'm coming home to like 5 days of rain.
So I was really excited to tomorrow's my last day of not having a full-time job. Now I have two of them, go figure. But the good Lord gave me 6 months off. I got laid off last year. I've talked about it on the show, but that it comes to an end on a Wednesday. So I was really looking forward to sitting there with just a cold beer all day and watching practice at Indianapolis. Again, the Indy 500 to me is number one. I love that race and all the lore and history and everything about it. And especially since Kyle Larson is there to represent the short track world. I was really excited about this, but it looks like it's going to rain every day except for Thursday. So that doesn't bode well for a lot of teams, especially with for Larson, in my opinion, since McLaren failed to get Fernando Alonso in the show 1 year. That was a little different, and that was them being cocky and European. Now they've kind of figured it out. So I think you'll be safe. But, yeah, this is going to throw a big wrench into a lot of teams' plans, especially some of the smaller ones or the one-off injuries to get up to speed here. And it's going to make bump day on Saturday really interesting – or Sunday, excuse me. Hopefully we'll see some action. Who knows? It looks like it's going to rain all fucking day tomorrow, all day Wednesday. Thursday we should get something, and then a qualifying will clear up. But by then, it's too late. So one of these days, we'll see some really intense action. But I am a nervous wreck now as a Kyle Larson fan. But you can watch it all on Peacock, in theory, starting tomorrow, I think at 10 a.m. or something like that. They'll do all the veteran orientation and all that kind of shit. I think Callum Islett probably has to go through the program again, where he runs all the different laps at different speeds and all that, since he announced for McLaren today. He's filling in for David Malukas, who is still who's lost his IndyCar career over breaking his wrist. So that's a bummer. But Callum Islett's pretty good, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm sure out of anyone, him and Larson are the ones sweating this the most. But we'll see. I'm still going to sit there and watch a rain in Indianapolis all day tomorrow before I re-enter the workforce as a proud, hardworking, blue-collar American. So
I'm sure he'll be fine.
He'll be okay. But yeah, stranger things have happened. Yeah. Penske missed the Indy 500 once. So.
Guys in timeout this year. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's true. So I wasn't the only one at the track this weekend, Rob. It's time to get the septic tank opened and talk about your trip.
We're going to climb on in the septic tank, folks. And I went to the nicest bathrooms in the United States when it comes to Short Track America or otherwise. Stafford Motor Speedway, of course, held their the rainout date for the spring sizzler. Supposed to be last week, but it got obviously rained out like everything else in my life. It just pissed rain all that week. But it was good for me because it means I actually got to go to the racetrack. It was awesome. I got there literally as the modified feature was rolling off on track, Ron Silk just completely fucking spanked the field. Nobody had anything for him. He got kind of shuffled back during the pit cycle during the middle of the race, so we kind of got to see a little bit of a show of him come back up, but he was a good like 3 or 4 tenths quicker every single lap, so he handled that one easily. I like Ron Silk, so it was cool to see that happen. There's none better in modifieds right now. Great field, though. Justin Bonzinor was out there. Doug Kobe, of course, and cars that you usually don't see them in. Those are, you know, some big modified tour champions. Matt Hirschman was out there continuing his not as good campaign as usual. You kind of expect him to do better than he did. I think he came in seventh or something like that. But usually when there's a big check on the line, he's up front, and he just didn't have anything for him this time. But, yeah, Stafford is the nicest short track in the U.S. I don't think there's any debate on that. I think Eldora is the only one that even comes close. I'm telling you, though, like every single urinal in the men's room has a fucking television with Flow Racing on there. So you do not miss a second of racing when you go to the pisser. It's fucking awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's great. Decent food. It's very expensive. I spent like $20 on chicken tenders, which weren't that great and gave me a little tummy ache. So that's a demerit for them. But everything else was awesome. They even got their own fucking beer, folks.
Good thing they got those TVs in the bathroom.
It's
then.
True. So you don't miss anything. Maybe they know something that I now know. But, but yeah, lots of great racing. All the local divisions were fucking sweet. The street stock feature was hilarious. Ryan Waterman and Travis Hidar wrecking each other at the very end and getting just immediately disqualified, which is something that NASCAR hasn't figured out how to do yet. So that was kind of cool to see him do that at a street stock race. I left early before the Aurora Borealis actually showed up at the racetrack and before the SKs put on a show. But yeah, great night of racing out at Stafford. If you ever have a chance to get down there, I'm telling you, it's the nicest short track facility, particularly in New England. And a lot of tracks are making a lot of upgrades right now to try and keep pace, but Stafford just got them all whooped. There's no question about that. It's a nice place to go in comparison to any other racetrack in the United States. So I hope to see you guys up there at some point, because even down to the racing, it's just good all the time. When your track division is the SK Modified, it's like, come the fuck on, man. Everyone else is in second place. There's a lot of racing this weekend. A lot of it got rained out. World of Outlaws couldn't run at all. The late model division World of Outlaws is off for a couple weeks. Out at Fairbury, Devin Moran got a big win. RTJ won at Farmer City. Bobby Pierce was dog shit all weekend, which is not something you see very often. Over in USAC, Logan Seavey got a big win at Bloomington. That was fucking sweet. Speaking of sweet, the High Limit Series, Brad Sweet, won by a Kyle Larson amount at Kansas at 34 over James McFadden. That's my finish of the week right there. Not a big Brad Sweet fan, but yeah, that was fucking killer. Also in High Limit news, and speaking of Fonda, they actually canceled the race coming up due to track conditions. I guess they got a new surface in there, and it's just full of rocks. So that's not good for anybody. So they canceled that show, which is a damn shame. I was considering going out to try and see that, but I guess they saved me the 5-hour drive. So
you need to send like a rock collectors club up there and
yeah,
get those nerds to clean that shit out.
Well, I tell you, I wish I would have known about it before I went to Home Depot and bought some drainage rocks for myself, because I could have picked a few out of the track and had a little history upstairs. But yeah, it is what it is. And then the last thing I want to say here in the septic tank before we get to our DAR for the week, which also comes from the short track world, I don't even know who these guys are. It was the street stock division at Bowman Gray. Really hilarious video. I'm sure we'll post it.
Yes.
Just pure chaos out there. Not the typical Bowman Gray wreck fest that they're famous for, somewhat unfairly, but it happens enough to where, you know, those highlights seep out when they need to. But this was great. There was a wreck at the end of the race. They were mad at the flagman. There was a guy taking the slowest run across the infield I've ever seen. Another driver who also was involved in this accident gets out of his car. He's already got a fucking cigarette lit before he gets out of the car. No. Just
doesn't even have his helmet off. Just already got a heater.
Open face helmet.
And he's running across the track with he pulls it out of his hand and still has it in his hand while running across the track.
Fucking amazing. I guess they're running slow enough to where you can still smoke ciggies in the car, but man, that was fucking awesome. I love Bowman Gray so much. I got to get down there too. Fortunately, it's close enough to Darlington to where I could probably 1-2 that if their season runs late enough. But man, that's on Flow Racing. Yeah, tune into that shit when you can. It's fun. But yeah, watching that guy get out of the car with that dart lit was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And yeah, vintage Bowman Gray for sure. As I said, our Dart for the Week does come from the short track world. It comes from a guy named Steven Kratzer. I don't even remember what this was in response to, or if there's just a standalone tweet. But he doesn't like High Limit, I'll tell you that. He says, too bad High Limit racing is just an exhibition race. Not real. Fake! Don't follow the same unwritten laws of real racing, like passing under the yellow in the way of the choose cone. The owners winning the staged events of High Limit. You can't tell me it's not like WWE wrestling. And I'll be the first to say it's totally different, actually. Brad Sweet's the fastest sprint car driver in the country. He was whooping him in the Outlaws. He still does. And yeah, he's cashing his own checks now, but that is very much a very real sprint car show. And I'm watching him at Kokomo right now on the TV down here in Scooters as we record this. And yeah, lots of real racing, lots of real wrecks. It is not staged. So that's a bad opinion, bud. And I, as always, I invite you to go outside and look at the Aurora if it's still around and just take in the wonders of this universe that we live in and just stop making shit up. So.
Oh. The other short track incident we got to talk about.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Rob, you gotta be able to explain this better than I can. But there was an incident with Bobby Simmons III. I don't know which track he was at.
Yeah,
but
I don't actually know where he was either, to be honest. I never got to the bottom of that because this clip is a show shocking. You just kind of watch it over and over again. Bobby Simmons is a local staple. He races Super Modifieds. He's also one of the hosts of the Black Flag podcast. It's a great show. Do listen to that if you want to learn about short track racing in New England. And they talk about a lot of super late model stuff. Noah Gregson's been on there. Steven Nassi's been on the show. They get a lot of folks on there. It's a good show. Anyway, so they're running pace laps. And I'm sure we'll post this video on Instagram as well. If you haven't already seen it, because it's literally been posted fucking everywhere. But they're running pace laps, and a track truck, like a safety truck, just drives out into the racing line onto the racetrack and just completely T-bones Bobby in his super super modified. It's the scariest shit, you know, a huge, you know, F-350 fucking truck nut motherfucker coming out there and just taking out a hand-built super modified is not something you see every day. So, I hope that guy... he's just gonna be a race fan and a DARF after that, because I hope they don't allow him on the actual facility ever again after pulling that off. I've heard that maybe he got blinded by the sun or whatever, but you know, we do live in a world where there's fucking radios, so maybe somebody could have cleared him before he drove across a live racetrack. Yeah, maybe just a pair of wraparounds, you know, some blue blockers or some shit. But almost killed Bobby Timmons. Fortunately, he's fine. I don't know, I haven't listened to Black Flag yet, but that car looked, I don't know how big of, I don't know how much of an impact they can take and not bend the frame or something like that. So yeah, he lost the race car out of the deal, and that guy is our DARF of the fucking century. He may not have been a pure DARF, just a fan before, but he certainly should be now. And your sentence is to just never step foot inside of a racetrack ever again.
Yeah, that was fucking wild.
Real fucking bad. But that's our short track septic tank. There's a lot of good stuff coming up this weekend. Again, I'll be watching a lot of indie qualifying, so that's probably all you're going to hear about me on the internet or otherwise for the coming week or two. But I'll try and keep tuned in, because there's a lot of great shit coming up. The Little 500, Hoosier 100, all that shit. So and World of Outlaws, everyone's ripping. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up, and I'm sure we'll talk about that at a different time. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and flush it on down.
So, as mentioned last week, this coming weekend, NASCAR is back in North Wilkesboro for their second All-Star race at the track. And while Ashley and I will not be going this year, I'm sure we'll all be watching. And to get us revved up for this weekend, I went and found probably one of the oldest broadcasts I could find from North Wilkesboro, the 1970 Gwen Staley 400. Now, this was during the time period where... I was actually a little incorrect when I first found this. I thought this was a tape delay deal, but actually what they had done is they tuned in the broadcast halfway through the race. Now, this was also the time when NASCAR was shown as part of ABC's Wild World of Sports, which, you know, that for those who weren't around when that was still a thing, you know, they'd have different sports all in this, like, day-long program where you'd go from one event to the other, and different forms of auto racing were established long ago. But
yeah, the first racing I ever watched was definitely on Wide World of Sports in the mid to late 80s. So I love that shit. It was nice to see this pop up for a video of the week.
That makes sense. So they actually they they picked up the broadcast halfway through the race. And in saying that, we're halfway through this race and Richard Petty's already got a lap lead on the field.
Yeah.
So let's just
vintage North Wilkesboro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say that whether it's not even so much North Wilkesboro, but just that era of racing. But we'll yeah. talk a little bit more about that. So the yep. broadcast, we've got a pretty decent broadcasting team. A guy named Jim McKay, who I'd never heard of.
Oh yeah.
Another guy on the ground, Bill Montgomery.
He was basically the voice at the Indy 500 that would tell people that you were on fire for many years.
Yeah. Okay. But we also had Chris Konomacki, who we've talked about him plenty of times. He's one of the greatest motorsports journalists of all time, and it was very, very cool to hear him as part of this broadcast.
Yep.
Before we go through the whole thing, I will just say that the race itself was pretty boring.
Yeah.
But I think to go back in time and see this time capsule of not just what's going on at the track, but you get interviews with all sorts of drivers, which is cool to see. That's really the main draw of this, and also the commercials. The commercials are very good here.
Yes, they are.
But, you know, like I said, they start off with Petty's already got a lap lead on the field. Let's see here. At this point in 1970, there were only the front stretch grandstands. Like, if you look at even what the track was like in the 90s and 80s, it's much more scaled down as far as attendance and what's been built out. There's no pit wall and for the pit stalls. The trucks are parked pretty much right at their pit stalls, which is pretty wild to see compared to what we see now with NASCAR. So again, very cool time capsule, because this is, you know, the great thing about the internet is for those of us who grew up in the era where you didn't get to see any sort of old races. Maybe once in a while ESPN would have some old broadcast here and there. But
yeah, ESPN Classic would show shit like this on rare occasion. Yeah.
All these old races, you only got to read about them. So now there's just this wealth of old shit on the internet to check out. And yeah, granted, NASCAR Classics is also helping with that. But long before they were around, there were people uploading this stuff. So that's how we found this, obviously. The first commercial break is for... We see an ad for Palmolive Shave Gel. And there are a couple different ads for this particular product. And for some reason, their ad campaign was guys just doing their normal everyday things without shaving, like just leaving the foam on their face because it smelled so good, which is just bizarre. Like I think my favorite little clip, there's like two or three of these commercials. Mm-hmm. Some guy shows up to his wedding with the shaving cream still on his face.
He was my
his
favorite.
His wife just gives some nonplussed look at the altar, which is very, very funny. Then after that, there's like an Allstate life insurance commercial. There's a surprising lack of automotive commercials throughout this. I mean, especially when you go and find broadcasts from the 80s and 90s, whatever. A lot of the advertising is very heavily based around automotive products, which obviously makes sense. But here it's all just like, again, like not even just men's healthcare products, but like just, you know, shaving cream and
fucking
and
whatever,
hairspray
yeah.
and all this other shit. And then also like life insurance and stuff. Those are the two main advertisers.
Yeah. Broadcast. Well, this was definitely an early time and a pre-cable version of television too, where there's only a few networks you could buy on. So you just kind of bought mm-hmm. time whenever you could, I guess. And that's kind of what we saw here.
Let's see. There's also an ad for TWA Airlines, which I've heard a lot about them over the years. And I know there's that one airport that still has the TWA lounge.
Oh, it's
like
incredible,
this very cool
dude.
Postmodern thing. And this fucking ad, like there's movies playing and staircases and bars and all this shit going on. Like I have never, ever in my life seen a plane like this in real life. So
yeah, how far we've fallen. Yeah. Like well, I'll tell you, like if you connect through JFK, especially if you're flying JetBlue, which that's all of our tax bracket is JetBlue. Not to make assumptions about anybody on this show, but I feel like, you know, if we're flying, we're not
it's
spending
fair.
The big bucks. Yeah, we're flying JetBlue. And if you connect through JFK, the original TWA terminal that they built there has been completely restored to the spec that it was in the 50s and 60s. I think it was the late, early 60s when they built it. It is absolutely incredible. And if you have a layover that's long enough to get out of security and into security, it's completely worth checking out. It's free to go into. They do have a hotel now, and there's some bars that you can spend a fucking mortgage payment on there. But it is 100%. If you're into vintage shit, old architecture, or just have a couple hours to kill, it's a lot nicer than Terminal 5, I'll tell you that. And yeah, it's definitely a glimpse to a bygone era, which you get a little glimpse of in this TWA commercial. Because yeah, I don't know about you guys, but even when you fly American or one of the nicer American carriers, it's not like that anymore at all.
I've never seen an airplane with an upstairs. I don't think I'd trust one in 1970. But,
Though I will say this, shout out to American Airlines. They did give me a free beer when I was flying out to Arkansas. So kudos to them. That's as close as we get now.
It's truly a miracle.
They just cannot make it to you in time to charge you for it. So, you know. Yeah, different back times. Anyway.
Back to some actual racing notes from this broadcast. So there's obviously in the 70s, there's no sort of, you know, lineup ticker or anything. Really, they only show you the first four drivers. They only list the first four drivers at any given point in the race. And obviously, Petty's up there. Leroy Yarborough, Bobby Isaac, and Donnie Allison, I think, are the first four that you see on the track.
Yeah.
And going back to the lineup and who's in this race, this is during that time period where a lot of drivers did not run every single race. I mean, they were still running 50, 60-something races in 1970. So not everybody ran the full season. And it was very surprising, especially North Wilkesboro, to not see, like, Cale Yarborough or Bobby Allison in this race, or a lot of the other guys who were even up in the points during this time period. You have Pete Hamilton there, who he won the 500 that year and Talladega, and he actually won Talladega twice that year, and he's in the pits as Petty's relief driver if he needs him, which is crazy to think about. Like, the guy who won all those races just in there hanging out waiting. Donnie Allison, they mentioned, I think he was driving for— was he driving for Junior Johnson then? I can't remember who they said he was driving for.
Yeah, but I think so. Yeah, he
was having some motor issues. At one point, he's in the pits, and, like, his crew is climbing in the car. They thought his motor was going down, but that wasn't the case. What actually happens is he had a bad ignition, and he ends up getting he runs too close to the fence, gets a flat, wrecks the car, and they end up interviewing him later, and that's how we find out that happens.
When they interview him later, the infographic under his interview said Bobby Allison, number 22.
Oh, that's good. also, too, while we're talking about the interviews, so another thing we all loved in this broadcast was the inset interviews were just this little round circle in the middle of the screen with whoever they were talking to. Very 70s. Very, very 70s. I thought that was very neat.
Yeah, if you look at any old stock car magazines in the 70s, they all love that round floating head circle graphic too. So
occasionally it's a star, you know, if there's a special occasion or something. But usually it's this particular circle. Which when Jim McKay popped
up,
I love
a good floating head.
Seriously, when Jim McKay popped up on the screen the first time, it made me gasp a little bit because
I burst out laughing.
The next incident on the track involves Wendell Scott, which, again, crazy to get to see footage of him because you just don't see that stuff.
Yeah, I'd never seen this before.
Yeah.
He ended up blowing a motor. And I guess I got to mention this. So, again, this was 1970, folks. So get ready. Don't cancel
me. Who was interviewing him? Was that Ned Jarrett? No, he was still racing. Never mind. Sorry.
No, it was the Montgomery guy. No, right. No, I think it was Chris Economaki, maybe. I can't remember, but regardless.
No, it wasn't Chris. It was the other guy.
The other guy, okay. So he is referred to as the only Negro driver in the field, which, again, 1970, folks, that is not me. That is what they said on the broadcast. Very different time. That is not a word you can say anymore. And during his they actually interview him after the wreck, and the interviewer actually goes and asks him, "You're the only Negro driver in the field. How do the other drivers treat you?" And that is just a mind-blowing thing to bluntly bring up in the middle of this interview. Like, just crazy.
Wendell handles it with grace, and he says, "Yeah, they treat me all right, but honestly, I don't think much about it." And then to which this guy responds, "Yeah, neither do I." You know?
they're shouting over race cars.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I will say it was a nice little moment, I guess. When you think back to when this happened, I mean, Martin Luther King's murder was only 7 years prior, and Jackie Robinson—
oh, it was less than that.
Only made his— Jackie Robinson, was not even 20 years into baseball. So this is still that time period where there aren't as many black athletes in any sports, really. Yeah. So
certainly not in Grand National Racing. So
yes, definitely not. So very very jarring interview to see, but still cool.
Yeah, but
in a floating circle.
And there's also a joke. They joke about who's older, Wendell or Bill Champion. I don't know who Bill Champion is, and they make jokes about that. How Wendell, they were... even though Wendell's older, Bill looks older than Wendell. So that was funny.
I think they said Wendell was 48 years old in this race. So.
Yeah, they ask him how much longer he's going to drive and everything, which is kind of weird.
They said two or three more years, something like that, which I guess that lines up with how it actually played out. I forget when Wendell actually retired, but yeah, anytime you get to see Wendell Scott footage, because there's not a lot of it, or at least there's not a lot of it that you can find, it's kind of a cool thing. So
he's got a great accent, too. I loved his accent.
He does, yeah.
I have a note at about 35 minutes and 10 seconds. They're panning around the track, the action, and right before they cut to the next shot, you see a guy jumping off the truck. I don't know why that stuck out to me, but I watched like four or five times this guy just like flying in the air, jumping off the truck.
I missed that one, but I did see a quick clip of the flag man smoking a cigarette.
There are a lot of people smoking cigarettes all over the place there, which is not a surprise at all.
You could smoke on that jumbo jet too if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's fucking crazy.
Prior to the race, they did a couple pre-race interviews with both Richard Petty and Bobby Isaac, and it was I think the questions they asked were kind of interesting. Like they asked Richard like what it felt like to run up front, and then they asked Bobby Isaac what it would feel like to run in second place, which is what happened in the race. So just kind of odd to hear those questions asked.
Well, sometimes it was a foregone conclusion with the fields that were running at these races that Richard was going to run off with it.
Yes.
So
boy, which, did he.
Of course, yes, he did. One other note about, I guess, Richard himself and his car, like, again, not seeing too much actual footage of his old racing days in this time period, like the Roadrunner he was driving, like the ass end of that car was so huge. Like it was just, I don't know why that stuck out to me too, but just like how just the shape of the car was just crazy to me.
Yeah. I'll say this, like if you ever go to the Hall of Fame in Charlotte, like some of these cars, maybe not the exact cars, but very similar ones are parked on Glory Road and throughout the museum. And if you ever do go, I recommend watching a race like this, or at least a couple clips before you walk in, so you can really internalize just what the fuck these guys were driving out there in those days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it is...
boats.
It is insane. One thing I thought that was cool about this was they did make a point to mention on the broadcast that these look different from the Grand National cars you might normally see, because a lot of the things that made it onto big television or the full broadcast or, you know, a little bit more of a focus outside of Wide World of Sports were the winged cars that they were running at, like Daytona and places like that. So they made it a point to describe why these cars look different, why they don't have the big wings or the aero elements on the front. Kind of crazy to realize that this was the exact same time period as that. And NASCAR is very focused on keeping the cars pretty much the same everywhere we go to keep costs down or for whatever reason. But in these days, it didn't really matter all that much.
No, not at all. The broadcast team, so they didn't have the technology to clock these cars in real time as far as their speeds and whatnot. So broadcast team is basically doing the math in the booth for us. Like they have the seconds, you know, elapsed time of the laps, but they don't have the speed. So they calculate that, like, in the middle of this race, Petty's running basically qualifying laps, which you can see he's just running around everybody on the fucking track. Yeah. Cut to, let's see, it looks around 40 minutes. Dave Marcus is there. This is very early in Dave's NASCAR career, and he ends up blowing up, I guess, and... Right when this was happening, they were about to interview a young Harry Hyde, and they had to cut away from that to get footage of Dave's car. And even at this time in 1970, Dave's already got his sponsorship with Goodyear, so you can see how long that relationship's been going.
Oh, yeah.
We do get a nice little interview with Dave. He's balding even then. poor guy. Just always been the same Dave Marcus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just cool to see that. And then again, young Harry Hyde, he does not look at all like he did in the '80s, obviously, but just neat to see those guys, like guys I actually knew that were out there doing it then, and seeing them interviewed. Cause again, this is stuff you don't see.
Exactly.
Well, you skipped over my favorite part.
Oh, good.
That happened right before this. They showed a floating circle head of Linda Petty.
Yes,
and then right after that, the announcer says, "All the girls love Richard Petty. He is considered extremely handsome, and he has long sideburns now that make him look like a Confederate war hero." I fucking cackled.
I had that written down. I got my paper notes all mixed up. So yeah, I missed that. But yes, that was part of that. Very funny.
There's nothing more handsome than a Confederate war hero.
Going back to the Harry Hyde interview. So Harry Hyde at the time, he was working with Bobby Isaac, who was like second in this race. And they asked Harry if Bobby can catch Richard. And Harry says that they're saving, they got some tricks for the last 100 laps. Apparently those tricks were, they were running a narrower tire than everybody else was, which you could do that back then. Like there were not at all the restrictions on what you could do to the car. So they thought that was going to be what got them the race. Spoiler alert, it didn't happen, but still interesting to hear that sort of strategy. Let's see here. Where are my notes?
Yeah, Brian had to do handwritten notes this week. apparently he can't read them.
I can't read them, and they're all out of order. That's great. There were a couple automotive ads for Sears. Sears. This was a time when they were making a lot of their own. Like they had an automotive section, they did repairs. They made their own tires that had like fiberglass liners, which does not seem like a smart idea. And they also had a really cool ad involving the Baja 1000. Like I don't think I've ever seen a dune buggy that old, but basically just promoting diehard batteries back then. So that was really cool. There were more ads for the shave gel.
I hope you mentioned this deodorant commercial.
Oh, yes. We're getting there. Don't worry.
Okay.
before we get to that, we see an interview with Junior Johnson, who he even admits, like, unless Petty's got an issue, we ain't going to catch him. Like, nobody's going to fucking catch him.
Yeah.
There's an interview with Pete Hamilton where they ask him, like, how come you're not driving? He's like, yeah, Richard wanted me down here as a relief driver. That's his answer. Which I guess... doing a little bit of research for this, he had actually had some sort of like back issues or something from a wreck the year prior. So if you look at his record, like he didn't even though he had this amazing 1970 season, he didn't run that many races, and he was actually out of NASCAR by 74. So he had a very quick, successful career. I don't really know a ton about him. I just know he's a Northeast guy, and I know he won the Snowball Derby after he got out of NASCAR. So, just interesting little tidbit. Going to the next commercial break that Ashley just mentioned. So there was a product called Command, and they had two ads back to back. One was for deodorant, and this deodorant was like strictly for men. It had this wife like talking about the deodorant, and she's very like submissive to her husband. Like he calls her at the end of the commercial, and she's just like, "Coming, honey." It's very creepy.
He claps to command her to come to him.
Yes, very.
I hated it.
Whatever works, you know.
I hated that commercial so much.
The way she
said that the deodorant was to stop a man's wetness, I was like,
"Yes, gross. Very gross, so gross."
When you put it like that, yeah.
But following this extremely chauvinistic ad, we get another Command product, Command Hairspray for men, very funny.
Not so fast, ladies. Yeah.
So I guess they felt like they needed to be extremely sexist in one commercial to make up for men wearing hairspray in the next one.
Yeah, really. Drive the point home in the first one, yeah. Good shit.
Towards the
1970, folks.
Very different time.
On full display.
Did Confederate war generals wear hairspray? I don't think they did.
They would have been a lot more handsome if they did.
I guess so.
At this point, we're getting towards the end of the race, and I guess Richard has he's got a potential to run out of fuel. Like, it's wild to think that even though he had such a massive lead, this was still potentially a fuel mileage game, where to the point where he could have probably come in and pit and still had his lead, but he might have lost it.
Yeah.
But it was his race to lose. And you have the last parts of the race, you just kind of see the crew, like, with their pit boards, making notes to Richard and things like that.
Yeah.
The last couple commercials, there's a pretty cool, very nautical themed Schlitz ad, which their catchphrase was, if you run out of Schlitz, do you run out of beer? There was also a really neat animated ad for John Hancock, which I think they were life insurance or something. And the ad not life insurance, like an investment firm. Yep. And the ad was just these animated buildings smoking cigars and growing throughout each scene, which just a lot of really cool ads. Like, again, the race itself was boring, but it was a neat time capsule and the ads were great. So Absolutely. That was very cool.
Yeah.
And really that kind of rounds it out because the tape kind of cuts off. We don't see the last couple laps, but again, we'll Richard never know won.
He won by a full lap over Bobby Isaac. So
yeah. Yeah,
so. couple of cool notes from this one. Let's see here. Bobby Allison actually was in this race, but he didn't get covered like at all. He came in sixth. One thing I did notice here, Ron Keselowski was in this race, who is the brother of Bob, which is Brad Keselowski and Brian Keselowski's dad.
That's cool.
So he was out there. I didn't know there's another Keselowski.
Ron Keselowski had a few Grand National starts. He was a guy about town back then in the Cup Series and elsewhere. And yeah, his brother Bob, of course, we all know him from his own career and, of course, being the father of Brad. So that was pretty cool to see that here. And then Bill Champion, the oldest looking man in the field, he finished 14th. So.
not the most exciting race, but a very, very, very cool time capsule, and it sounds like we all enjoyed it. Ashley, do you have any other notes before we wrap this up?
My only note was the driver that was running second for a while and then third, Leroy Yarborough. I don't know if y'all know anything about his past after this.
Oh yeah.
But he is a very wild fucking story. But literally 4 days after this race at North Wilkesboro, he went to Texas for a Goodyear tire test and had a really bad accident where he got a bad head injury. Mm-hmm. So from there, the next year he got another head injury in an IndyCar. And then later he contracted a spotted fever from a tick bite, and he was like a heavy alcoholic. And then in 1977, he was ruled incompetent to handle his own affairs, so he had to move in with his mother. And then in 1980, he tried to strangle her to death.
Yes.
So he was then committed to a mental hospital and then died from a seizure in 84. So, just a few days after this race, really...
His life changed.
His life changed dramatically.
Was he Cale's brother?
No, there's no relation.
No, it was
no
a different
at all.
No,
it was spelled different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of people make that a mistake, but yeah, he's no relation to Cale.
Yeah. Okay. So, wild story.
Cool. So, again, I'm sure we'll find other videos like this as the show goes on because even though the racing might not be great, I guess let's talk about that real quick. For those who bitch about some of the races today, and granted, yes, the NASCAR short track racing, the new package, the new car is not a great short track car, but this is what it used to be like, folks. So
Larson didn't lap him last year, so at least take that one to the bank.
Yeah, people long for the good old days, but I don't want to watch the leader be the only one on the lead lap.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
For as aesthetically pleasing as the 1970s were.
Yeah.
I'm good with the racing.
Yeah. I'm okay with today. It now. Yeah.
Yep. So for this coming video of the week, Rob actually found this one because, again, we are in Indy 500 mode. So Rob found one he wants to show. So take it away.
Yeah. So as I was talking about earlier in the show, qualifying for the Indy 500, and it's still dramatic. The fields aren't as big. There's 34 cars this year, which does facilitate a bump day, which Indy qualifying has changed throughout the years. But essentially, they'll qualify a certain amount of cars on one day over the course of a few days, whatever. This year, it's a two-day show for qualifying. But anyway, they'll qualify the first, 30 cars or whatever, 31, 32. There's 33 cars in the field, and they'll have bump day, which is where everybody else tries to race their way into that last spot in the field. And there was a time in the mid-90s, right before the big split in IndyCar between the IRL and CART, where, and there's a lot of politics that play into this too, for which are some of the reason why Penske was unable to make the show in 95, not to spoil the video for you. But we'll be watching Bump Day from 1995. IndyCar actually put this video out, so it's a nice little edited version of it, so you don't have to spend 2 hours watching it. I do recommend watching the full two-hour version of it if you can. It's pretty cool. It's very dramatic, but just watching Penske at his lowest moment, because, of course, you know, Roger Penske now owns the Speedway. He's always fast there. He's won so many times with so many different drivers. Two of the four-time winners for the Indy 500, Rick Mears and Elio Castroneves, they got some of their BorgWarners with Penske. So he's pretty much the man there. And this is sort of the flip side of that story. It's really, really... this is probably my favorite racing video out there, and I'll watch it anytime the month of May comes around because it really shows how Indy really does, despite all the politics, it does kind of choose who makes the show. So I'm really looking forward for you to watch this for the 1,000th time, and also for you guys, if you haven't watched this already, to watch it for the first time. So
yeah, I have not, so...
Yeah, back in the day when there was a lot of cars trying to make the field, and this was definitely the peak of IndyCar in the 90s, so interesting little time capsule for things fell apart, and definitely one of the lowest moments, which we still see. You know, lots of big guys get bumped from the field to this day, and we could see that again this year, so. Good shit.
Cool, well, that pretty much wraps up the show this week, then. Trying to think, aside from indie stuff going on, I don't necessarily have anything going on race weekend wise. Really, the weather is so shitty in Ohio that, I mean, I'd love to get to one of the dirt tracks this weekend, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to. What about you guys? Doing anything?
No, I'm staying in this weekend. The next short track I'll be going to is Thompson on Memorial Day Monday, the actual Memorial Day. They're running an open modified show, but I'm going to be a good husband this weekend and go to some antique shows with my wife. So.
Nice. So you can buy some more Kyle Larson diecasts.
If they have them.
Clearance.
Probably
some
a bunch
42
of
42 cars on the clearance rack.
Yeah, probably a bunch of dusty old records that don't play, and some furniture that we shouldn't get because we have no room for it. But that's how we roll at Brimfield Fair in Massachusetts. So, what about you, Trula? What do you got going on?
Well, I'm bummed I'm not going to North Wilkesboro, but it's just not in the cards this year. And that's fine, but I'm going out of town. I'll be out of town all week, so I don't know how much racing I'll get to watch. I'll try to watch. Yeah.
Well, there's a good amount of it. The Cars Tour is running tomorrow night, so or tonight, actually, if you're listening to the show. If you're listening to this, it is a day early. You're not crazy.
Yeah.
We wanted to keep this current, so we're going to drop it a day early since Brian's traveling, and we would have had another shot to release it, and we want our information to be 100% correct. And it rarely is, but, you know, we got to give ourselves a fighting chance here. Yeah, Cars Tour, North Wilkesboro, next couple nights. High limits everywhere. There's a lot of racing going on this weekend. And, of course, like I said, Indy qualifying this weekend, which is always a good show. Plus NASCAR, so.
Yeah. It's a very full week.
Well, as always, you can find us on Instagram at Meet Me at Applebee's and Meet Me at DeBee's on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things. SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com. Meemaw, what do you want to plug this week?
Meemaw, selling Meemaw's melons down at the watermelon patch.
Yeah, the old farmer's market.
So real quick, speaking of Meemaw, so I sent it to the group chat, and one of the handful of weird things I found in the Petty Museum was a photo of Linda Petty and Meemaw's Meemaw's cookbook. So that wasn't for sale, unfortunately, but I would have gotten it for you if it was. Real quick, I'll just mention the couple things that I saw in this museum. Richard had a bee's nest from Linda's like memorial that he like fucking sealed and put in the corner of the museum, which was just bizarre. It had his like the book that he learned how to handwrite on. Just weird shit, man. Like obviously the cool stuff is there, but yeah, just go around and look. There's so much bizarre stuff in that museum.
It's yeah,
that's cool. I definitely want to check that out someday.
Yeah, so many random knickknacks. It's great.
That's awesome. Rob Motes underscore unofficial is me on the internet. My band's called These Wild Plains. We'll have some stuff to talk about pretty soon with that. But yeah, just I don't do anything on the internet. My band does sometimes. But yeah, we're working on a new record, but we're way off from having anything to talk about there. But we will have some shows coming up pretty soon. So keep locked in to the These Wild Plains channels on the internet, or just Google it and give us a few spins on Spotify. You know, we could always use an extra 30 cents. So
there you go. Well, folks, the check is here. So thank you again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will talk to you all next week.